So they asked me before if I was going to speak about Chag Shavuot. So I said I wasn't planning on it, but I'll make believe that I'll say something about. I'll find some way to get to that before we're finished. And also, we had a request that the learning today be Bizchut Malka Rachel Bat Sarah Tova, that she should have Refuah Shleima. So first of all, she should have Refuah Shleima. Secondly, I gave a class, I think, last year, how I was completely unconvinced that you can learn for somebody else's chuyot, but if you can, then it should certainly work. I remember when Rav Mital was very ill in the hospital, and Rav Lichtenstein, who is most of the time a rationalist, so he sent out a letter to all the students saying that he was very careful in language. He says, Minhag Yisrael, the custom is, when somebody's sick, is this is what we do. So everybody, like, he didn't want to say, you know, it'll help. But this is what we do. So this is, I don't believe it could hurt. Although, you know, rabbis, if I think about it enough, I'll figure out a way it can hurt. But I don't believe, don't even try. Okay, I don't think it can hurt. Okay. My next-door neighbor's having surgery this morning also. Here's a man who, when I moved into the house next door to him 28 years ago, he said, "Hi, my name is Itzik. I hate religious people." That was his, those are first thing. Absolutely, those are the exact words. Of course. So I knew he was going for surgery, so I asked him, "Should I come to the hospital?" He goes, "No, pray for me." So. Okay. Do what you do. Okay, so let's go. Therefore, and do what we do. So, in the beginning of Sefer Bar Midbar, the beginning of Parshat Bar Midbar, we're told to count the Jews. I'm sure I've said this before. The real name, I say the real name, the real name in Chazal for the book is not Bar Midbar. The real name is Sefer HaPikudim, which is the book of countings, which is probably where we get numbers from. I mean, as a whole, the English names are far better than the used Hebrew names. But I've said this too many times, so I'm not going to repeat this unnecessarily now. I mean, Exodus is better than Shemot, right? As the name of a book, right? And in Chazal, it's called Sefer Gula. Vayikra is not a very good name, but in Chazal it's called Torat Kohanim, which translates into Latin and then English as Leviticus. So as generally, the English names are, I mean, it's not nice to say, but the English names are better than the Hebrew names are. But over here, the book begins with a counting. There's another counting later on, why the countings are so significant. So a number of commentaries have tried to, especially I believe the Nitziv, if you take a look, the Nitziv wrote introductions to each one of the books of the Torah. And it's interesting to see his introduction. He does try to weave into the countings as a major theme of the book, not just as a coincidence that takes place in the very beginning. Reading Pasuk Bet, it says, if you throw it on the floor hard, they stop. Su'u et rosh kol adat b'nei Yisrael l'mishpachotam l'veit avotam. So we're told over here to count the entire community of Israel, the children of Israel, to their families, to their fathers' homes, the numbers of each male, legugulotam. How would you translate that? Right, per head. Let me see. Charlotte, give me the Chumash a second. No, I want the Hebrew of the... of the pasuk before. The next pasuk, pasuk Gimel, continues and says, "Miben esrim shana v'mala kol yotzei tzavai b'Israel tifku otam l'tzavotam atava Aharon." That anyone from 20 years of age and above, kol yotzei tzavai b'Israel. What does that mean? All those who go out to the army in Israel. Those are the ones who should be counted. Which means over here, the Torah is really quite clear that we're not dealing with a general census, but what we're dealing with is a census of army-age males. But that's not what bothers me. Already? Yeah, I don't know. So, now... Right, right. So why Google time is interesting as far as how the counting takes place. There is, by the way, one thing which is missing over here, and then you can decide, you know what, I will get to the su'u before I finish then, okay? We will not completely ignore your question. Why does it mean to su'u at rosh, to lift them up or somehow? I will come to that. We'll see an interesting Ramban, hopefully, Billy Nether, before we finish.
Can you take it from this, or did you take it from the
Yerushalayim? Well, obviously, I mean, this would be before the Tehillim. In source number 2, we have a little bit later down in the chapter, what we've skipped is it gives a list of all the heads of the various tribes. They're the ones who are somehow going to help facilitate, help work on this. And then it says, Ela... These were, meaning these are the heads of the various tribes, so those are the ones who are listed. These, again, the leaders of the various tribes, the ones who've been named, they're the ones who were taken. So what we have over here is Moshe and Aaron are being used, and the heads of the various tribes are being used. Pasuk Yud Chet is the one that we really want to talk about today, and the reality is it's not even the whole Pasuk. It's just one word. That troubles me. The whole class today. He's like, people ask you, what do you do? He said, just one word. It's only one word. You'll tell me which word it is. The et kol ha'ida, and the entire congregation, hikilu, they gathered, ve'echad l'chodesh ha'sheni, on the first day of the second month. By the way, you will be interested to find out that later events in the book of Bamidbar take place before this, which means we have things which are clearly not in sequence. Vayityaldu al mishpachotam, Levet Avotam, b'mispar shemot mibein esrim shana umala l'gugulotam. And now I can no longer translate. The reason I can no longer translate is because the word v'yit yaldu is completely strange. Now before you go and you read the English and you tell me what your commentary said, I don't care. A matter of fact, I don't care so much that if you look on the bottom of page 4, I gave you 4 different English translations that you could consider, and they registered by family, which is found on a disc that I have from Dafka, established their genealogies, which is in the stone Chumash by Art Scroll, registered by ancestry, which is Aryeh Kaplan, and they declared their pedigrees after their families, which is both JPS and, interestingly enough, the King James Version, which is where the JPS got that particular line for, word for word. The problem that we have is the word vayityaldu. We'll try to read the verse again. The whole congregation gathers on this and this date. Vayityaldu al mishpachotam. They did something by family, according to father's habit. Levet avotam, bimispar shemot, the number of names. Bibenis from shana v'mala, from 20 years old and above. Legugulotam, again, according to his, which means this is the implication of what they were asked to do in the very beginning. But the interesting thing, as I said again, is this word that I don't know the meaning of. Vayityaldu. Ibn Ezra says vayityaldu means bikshu matai noldu. Prove your age, basically. This is from the age of 20, so trying to get into a bar, you need to show your license. None of you ever did this, right? None of you ever went in with fake ID, right? None of you even know about this, right? Not to a bar. Okay. So where did you? So one second. So where did you sneak into?
We won't talk about it in public.
Okay. This may be far more interesting than my class today. So this may be worthwhile pursuing. Vayit yaldu bikshu matay noldu ba'avur cheshbon esrim shana az nichtavu toldotam. So what the Ibn Ezra understands vayit yaldu al mishpachotam is they proved their birth dates. Means the purpose over here is to show how old you are in order to show that you are eligible to go out to war, which is also interesting because then the implication would be that the people were actually interested in proving their ages and did not try to avoid the draft, but rather they what? I'm not saying anything. But I'll say more if nothing later on, okay? So let's move on a second. Rashi then focuses on something slightly different. Rashi says, "Vayit yaldu al mishpachotam, heviu sifrei yuchuseihem." They would bring the books of the, or literally the records. They would genealogical records. Heviu sifrei yuchuseihem, the eidei cheskat leidatam ol leidat kol achad v'achad litiaches el hashevet. Now, Rashi says they would bring evidence, either genealogical records or witnesses, in order to establish their relationship with this particular tribe. So what the Ibn Ezra focused on was the age. The evidence was for the age. What what Rashi focuses on is the evidence for the particular family or tribe. And it's interesting within the backdrop of this to remember our whole story with the Mikalel, which, by the way, again, in the text by the Mikalel, it doesn't say any of this, but this is part of the rabbinic understanding of the Mikalel, is that he was, for whatever reason, unable to provide his evidence. Or his evidence. And it's interesting to keep the Mikalel in mind, just in the back of our minds, all the way through today, but let's proceed. What made Rashi give this interpretation? And by the way, is Rashi making a halachic statement over here? I mean, if somebody today, I mean, this is a question which comes up fairly often, especially in, you know, the generation where we have so many Baalei Tshuva, where somebody comes and says, newly religious, and he comes and says, oh, my father's father was a Kohen. Okay? Is that enough for someone to say to establish him as a Kohen? Or do you say, bring records? Which means, how do we know that this is actually the case? Now, this may sound a little bit harsh, but it actually becomes a source for a very interesting issue, because sometimes people are married already or may be interested in marrying somebody who a Kohen is not appropriate to marry. So how exactly do you establish that you're a Kohen is a very serious issue, which an argument between the poskim, whether you actually need evidence or it's just enough that you, how do I know I'm a Kohen? My father's Kohen. A rabbi wrote a preface for a new book of mine, which is coming out on Vayikra. And he wrote at the end of the introduction that it's so appropriate because I'm a Kohen. And so I wrote back to him, I'm not a Kohen, and my father's not even a Kohen. Okay, so he changed the preface then, and he took that line out. But is it enough for me to say, or someone say, oh, my father's Kohen, and that's it? Or is there a higher level of evidence which is needed? So I'm just saying is that, keep this in the back of your mind, but this Rashi is interesting, because this Rashi seems to be saying that in order to establish who you are, you needed actual genealogical records or evidence. So does that really raise the bar in terms of a halachic discussion today? So I'm just saying that if I had to give a halachic class this Shabbos, I would very likely pursue that. Right. And it's the same problem. What level of knowledge does one need in order to, what is it that establishes one as a Kohen?
Well, in some Sephardic communities, I mean, I had students who said they could trace their lineage to Eli HaKohen. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, you probably could not, but...
Tawil.
Well, Dweks are Kohen.
Oh, Dweks, not Tawil, Dwek, yeah.
But it wasn't necessarily a Dwek.
Right.
I don't know, but they would say they in their family.
You know, the reason is because there was some kind of curse by the children of that they were supposed to die. There was a whole story in the Gemara about this, mm-hmm. and the name itself was like a refuah, like a counter to the story. But yeah, but I am familiar with this. By the way, that doesn't help.
But
I'll tell you why it doesn't help. It doesn't help just because I can trace the father's genealogy all the way back, but what about the mother's all along the way? So now you can tell me that in the Syrian community, at least in New York, for the last 95 years or so, they would not marry any non-Jews and no conversion.
Yeah,
I know. That was if you hear a Syrian family talk about an intermarriage, it generally will mean with an Ashkenazi. No, it's not a joke, but along the line. It's not enough necessarily to know the father's genealogy, one would also have to know certain, even intimate information about the. Yeah, but then again, Syrian men may not care so much about women and only focus on the men. Okay? Just for the tape, I should say that she's shaking her head right now in agreement. Okay. No, you can say your name afterwards so that we could... Okay.
Why does this matter? Like, why do we care now at this juncture?
Who's who? Okay.
Everybody came out of Egypt. There was a whole Balagan. Nobody had anything.
Okay. So good. So if I ignore what the Torah is actually speaking about right now, which is what? Going out to war. And it really seems to be who would be privileged enough to go out to war. There is a second issue. And the second issue is that as they get into the marching formation, because it's not just war, there's another issue, which is really the background that we need to keep in mind. And we'll see some people who say it. I know nothing's ever convincing when I say it. We find a dead rabbi who says it. Then it becomes convincing. But part of the issue is there, if you follow the date, what date are we up to? You know the date.
First day,
the second month, the second year. Which means within this month, right, within a couple of days, probably within 20 days, they are going to start marching and leave Mount Sinai. Which is the destination was never Mount Sinai. The destination was always the land of Israel. Now, all of you are cheating a little bit because you know the way the book ends up and you know that they end up wandering around. What? You know, you cheated and you looked at the end to see how this, right? So again, those of you who don't know it, this would be a spoiler alert. But they don't end up getting directly to the land of Israel, at least not very, very soon. They end up going on a hiatus of some 39 years, totaling 40 years from leaving Egypt till they actually get to Israel. Now, that's all future knowledge. At this particular juncture, nobody knows that, which means if I were to ask anybody there in the community, okay, we're about to leave Mount Sinai, where are we going? We're going to Israel. You're going to Israel, what do you need? Well, one, you need an army when you're about to get there. Again, we'll see more about that. Second point is that they need there to be proper marching formations because something has dramatically changed since they've left Egypt. The thing which has dramatically changed is when they left Egypt, they just had a whole mass of people. Now they have a Mishkan. And the Mishkan now has become the spiritual epicenter of the community. So now suddenly you have a new community, the new community with a new center. The center is the Mishkan. Now how do you go around this Mishkan? How do you encamp around the Mishkan? What it is that you do? So now the answer is that different Shvatim will be in different places. So there's a north, south, east, west to surround this Mishkan. So in order to do that, you need to establish who is within each tribe, which is interesting because what I just now did is I took the need to know about the tribal affiliation outside of the pure army issue, but the marching formation is a military concern, which means how one marches is important, and I'm going to say as important as having one's soldiers, but these are two sides of the same coin, so that may be an additional consideration over here. I hope so.
How
did it work? I just want to say, you know, they would call him up by the father's name. You're Mechubid with the first shot. He goes, "Who am I to shoot the first shot? You should shoot the first shot." Okay, let's look at the Siftei Chachamim, in the source number 5, Siftei Chachamim was called a super commentary. He's a commentary on Rashi. And he writes, explaining why Rashi said that we're bringing genealogical books and witnesses, who trach leferashken, he had to explain it this way, which means he's telling us that something is forcing Rashi to explain it like this, the fisha milat vayit yaldu humi binyan hit pael. So, I will hereby officially admit that once we get into issues of dikduk, you've lost me long ago. But, oh, thank you. It's a reflexive. Okay. Okay. Anyway. Right. Actually, my daughter-in-law tried desperately. No, she gave me a whole bunch of examples explaining what would be hitpael. Hitpael is action. It is action-oriented, right? hitnapel, as I jumped, you know, somebody was jumped upon. And you can go, there's an action involved in it. And again, that's really what the Siftei Yochamim is saying. Hu binyan hitpael she'omeid ba'atzmo ve'im hoye kamashma'o milashon leida hoye mashma'o she'hu lidu et atzmam. Right? They just gave birth to themselves. Ve'yit yaldu. They gave birth. Now, that's a little difficult because, I mean, we have not as of yet been able, I know, right now we're working getting men out of the equation. We're trying to get men out of the equation. But can you imagine getting both parents out of the equation? That somebody just births themselves. That's certainly interesting. So he says, basically, this is an impossibility. So how do I, v'yit yaldu? So how do I birth myself? So he says, no. That's why he's saying, no, you establish your birth by, again, actively you bring witnesses. You actively bring the genealogical records. So the Siftei Chachamim is saying, again, this word v'yit yaldu, the particular form, and those of you who are interested, the word is never used again in Tanakh. This is the only usage of this of this term. This is the place, and Rashi is therefore wants to make an action involved in it. And the chen pireshi hiviu shehim atzmam hiviu ed sifreim. So they hit pael. They went and they did something. The Radak, who has a book on Diktuk, actually gives the exact same interpretation of Rashi. This is under the entry of Yud, under Yeled, under the word Yud Lamed Dalid. He writes, "Vahit pael vayit yaldu amishpachotam halamed einene dugusha vayud petucha meimdat begai." If that is meaningful to any of you, excellent. Upirshu heru mimi noldu. Again, that's the action involved. They showed from who they were born. Klomer heru sifrei yichsam. Don't ask me why there's a sin and not a samach. Me eze shevet heim. That they actively showed which tribe they were from. The Gur Aryeh, who is the Maharal, who is also a super commentary on Rashi, writes, explaining this Rashi, he viu sifrei yuchsehim, nira didayik Rashi, didayik Rashi, that Rashi notices carefully the word, midichtiv al mishpachotam. Go back and look at the verse. Which means he's claiming that what was bothering Rashi is not Vayit Yaldu, rather Al Mishpachotam. Umidichti Vayit Yaldu, Hainu Chizkat Leidatam. Midulochti Vayit Pakdu Al Mishpachotam. He seems to be, and he doesn't really seem consistent here, but he seems to be saying what bothers Rashi is the word Mishpachotam. The other thing which he's saying is interesting, it didn't say vayit pakdu, which means they were counted according to their families. Right? He wanted to say, we counted them according to families, it would have said vayit pakdu al mishpachotam. Vayit yaldu, he is saying that it therefore ends up that they brought their evidence. I don't know when it really comes down to it how different the Gur Aryeh is from the Siftei Chachamim, but we do see both of them, again, attempting to explain Rashi. Well, again, if tribal affiliation is established by the father, then even if there's quote-unquote intermarriage, it's still okay. Secondly, we have absolute evidence that there was intermarriage among the different tribes. When I look at some of the genealogical records, and for example, Aaron, who's from Levi, he marries a girl who's from Yehuda. Again, just off the top, again, not all that many mothers or wives are mentioned over there, but you do see that... tribal intermarriage taking place, and the examples that... Right. Second point, even to say that they were separate would really more so be midrashic. I mean, you have the beautiful midrash that when the sea split, it split into 12 different channels, and each tribe went by itself. But as I'm not aware of any actual biblical textual evidence to say that they to indicate that they were separate, and this whole section, especially the way the commentaries are dealing with it, may actually be evidence of the opposite, that there was a great degree of intermingling, intermarriage, and therefore they need to establish it again, as it stresses the Beit Avotam according to the fathers, and that's how we're going to show the which tribe they're from. If you look at in source number 9, the Ktava Kabbalah, so we're in the 19th century now. Miben Esrim Shana, Kol Yotzei Tzava, Hem Shnei Tnaim, He goes, these are actually two conditions to be counted. You want to be counted, there are two conditions. One, you've been esrim, that you need to show that you're 20. Vishayu yotzei tzava. Second, that you are army eligible. Lohotzi hazakenim v'chalashim, which means those who are old or those who are weak are not counted. So again, it is interesting the way that they see this census. It is...
Twenty to sixty.
I hope so. Vi hu al, this verse is dealing with lineage. The pasuk haba hu al minyan, and the following verse. He's, by the way, commenting on verse 20. He says the following verse. Hu al minyan is on the counting. V'minyan hu rak al hashevet bichlalo. The only thing they counted was the entire tribe. Ki achar shehigidu shmotam, once each person would say his name. So according to him, each person would come in front of Moshe and Aaron, say their name. What did they then count? Manu kol hashemot. They would count all the names. Now the reason he's saying this is that there's something missing over here, that maybe you can make believe that it's here or just assume that it's here, but it's not here. And what's that? In a previous time that they were instructed to count, they were told that each one brings half a shekel. Right? Each one brings half a shekel, and you count all the shekelim. There is no reference to this, to the bringing of the shekel, so therefore the Ketav HaKabbalah will assume that it's not here. So what are they counting? Now, again, there's a problem counting Jews. So what do? You don't count Jews. What do you count? You count their names. So all the names were counted, and then they were added up. Manu kol shemot shel shevet yachad. V'lo manu lo lebeit avot v'lo lemishpachot. He says that it says that they should come by the families and come by the tribes, but it doesn't say that they were counted by the families. So again, if you go back and you read the actual words, he is interpreting what the words say. V'zesh amar pikdehem lemate. They'll be counted according to the tribe. So again, he sees this process. What he doesn't say clearly, what you should understand from this, is that we're counting for war, and that's why people who are ineligible for war are not part of the counting. We're counting by tribes, and only the tribes are counted, and not the individuals or the families. He continues in verse 10, V'tam toladot, kan kemo v'tyaldu al mishpachotam. Now this is interesting, because if you go back and look at the first source for a second, our problem in Pasuk Yudchet is, what does the word v'tyaldu mean? Again, the way the Sifti Chachamim try to convince us, it's that it's the hitpael on yeled, and the Radak as well, it's hitpael on yeled. So therefore, how do you birth yourself? But look at Pasuk Kaf, just for example. V'yu b'nei Reuven b'chor Yisrael todiltam l'mishpachotam. What does todiltam mean over there? And we have the word eila todot by Latza. What does it mean, eila todot? It means the genealogy or the lineage. Right? The generations means the lineage, or the people that were born from a particular person. So eila todot, if you go back to Vayit Yaldu, could very well, again, just think of the word. Vayit Yaldu doesn't mean that they gave birth to themselves. Vayit Yaldu is the similar to the word toldot. So, and that's exactly what really the Haktav HaKabbalah is telling us in source number 10, which I think is a very strong argument, is probably pshat. Most likely we shouldn't go any further and just stop over here and end early, and I'll go for a cup of coffee and cheesecake. But they won't let me do that, so I'll continue a little bit more. Yeah.
Nothing at the end. When done,
a Shavuot question. Okay. So let's continue. I was kidding when I said I was done. So okay. That was it. I know that for some people they're very tempting. See, if my wife was here, she'd be out the door now. Okay. Again, that Barbara Nell says something which again, I think we've heard already. V'amar v'yidu al mishpachotam l'beit avotam l'hagid shekol echad hodiyah toldato im bichtav unbeedim or ra'ayot lahuchiach shehem ben 20 shana v'mala. So it's interesting. They bring their toldot to prove that they're 20 years old. So again, he tries just to go. We see there's two elements. That's really what it is. There's two elements. One is age and the other is lineage. And the age is necessary to go to war. The lineage is necessary perhaps for the encampments or perhaps for another reason. Rav Yonatan Eivshitz, in the Sefer Tiferet Yonatan, again, this is 18th century, in source number 12, says, V'tkol eda hikilu, and it gives a real nice description of how it takes place. Hod hikilu et kol eda. Again, he's focusing, sorry for doing this to you again, but when you look back in source number 2, in the Pasuk we're talking, Pasuk Yudchet, V'tkol eda hikilu. What does that mean, et kol eda hikilu? The entire congregation was gathered together. So what does that mean if the entire congregation is gathered? It means that there's some kind of a public setting. There's a public event. Hadikilot kol eda b'minyan ze dafka nira dekan k'tiv v'yityoldu al mishpachotam lebeit avotam. The hiviu sifrei yuchseim, that the earlier part of the verse, they all gathered together publicly, and the second part of the verse, that they would bring, that the way understood v'yityoldu, as Rashi explained, that they would bring their lineage or their evidence. V'im yishalu le'echad ma yuchuscha, and if they asked somebody, well, what exactly is your lineage? Yomar, he would say, mishevet ploni, umi mishpacha ploni. I come from this tribe, and I come from this family. Upen yomur me'ed yodea, and if you ask, and how do you know? Im yomru ha'emet, shu mishpacha ploni, o hech noda davar l'moshe v'aron, shlo nimtza psu b'mishpachato. How would Moshe and Aaron know about each and every family? Lekach hikilu kol la'eda. V'im haya dover kozev, if he said something false, o shu nimtza psu b'mishpachato, or there was some kind of funny business within that particular family, lo hayu kol Yisrael shotkin, v'ya echad ma'arer de'ein zem yuchas. People would say, this person is not really of a proper family. Because it was done publicly, and everyone's quiet, who ot, it's a sign, that the people really of the proper lineage. Now, first of all, he explains the verse in a very nice way by saying that the purpose of gathering everybody together is if somebody claims they're from a particular family, that family is standing there and say, what are you talking about? We never saw you before. On the other hand, the part which may be disturbing about this, even though it's quite effective, is that it really could be humiliating. Somebody, you know, who is this? Oh, this is the son of the unmarried girl over there that slept with that other guy, you know. So the whole public setting of this could, as I said, be equally disturbing. But as I said, he is utilizing the words of the verse that this was done publicly with the whole community there. Yes?
We're talking about 50,000 just men of that age in each tribe.
Right, a lot of people.
So, I don't think they could talk about this all of it. I mean, I would imagine even they're broken down that, you know, they say that the head, there's one person who's the head of the whole tribe.
So,
I'm not
going to deal with the logistics of this, but I would presume that if a particular family was being presented, then the people who were the extended family would move up and center. That's what I would assume. Okay, so as I said, logistics don't concern me. In source 13, the Ramban assumes something which isn't here. First he quotes Rashi and doesn't love it. Right? The first two lines and in the middle of the second line is Lashon Rashi, and then he writes, Ve'ineinu nireh, doesn't make sense to me. Shuchim lavish star ve'edim ayuchoseim l'shifteim. Doesn't seem to me that each person had to actually bring evidence, you know, genealogical records and so on. Aval v'yit yaldu shenimnu toldotam l'mishpachotam l'beit avotam. Vayit Yaldu means they would say over which family they came from. Which, by the way, is similar to what we saw before from the Ketav HaKabbalah, who's obviously hundreds of years later, and most likely simply repeating what he understood from the Rabban. Hatam lomar, ki kasher tzival ta Moshe, kein mipi HaKodesh, Baruch Hu, nikalu kol eda kulam, el petach olmoid, everyone gathered, chutz mi erev rav, again, keep in mind with our Mikalel, the erev rav, the hangers on, Asher lomi b'nei Yisrael hema, ki nikarim hayu behem miyom shiyatzu Mitzrayim, because from the day they left Egypt, it was known that the Erev Rav were not part of the exact tribe, and the tribes themselves, and they would encamp, for those of you who don't remember, they would encamp or march together with the tribe of Dan, which was all the way in the south, so they would be a little bit further south than the rest. V'nehiviu kol eda ish shiklo. So what did the Ramban read into this? Something it didn't say, namely, that each person brought their shekel. Now, why does the Ramban do this? Right? Because it was said the first time. So it was said the first time. You don't have to say it again. So the Ramban is just assuming there was a shekel. V'amru lefnei Moshe v'nisiyim. What would each person do? He would get up and say, Ani ploni, noladati leploni, mimimishpachat ploni, shehu l'shevet ruvein v'zulato. I, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so, born to this tribe, Moshe noten shiklei kol shevet v'shevet b'makom yuchad. Moshe then would put each coin from each tribe in a special place. V'yadam is b'harprat v'haklal. And then he would know each tribe's number and therefore know the total number. Dan was in the south. You're thinking about in the land of Israel. In the land of Israel. One second. In the land of Israel, Dan was all the north, I think. I recall Dan being in the south. One second. Was this your homework assignment or one of your kids? If I'm not mistaken, by Dan it says Ma'asef Kol HaMachanot. The Ma'asef, which we collect all the others. So was I wrong? Is Dan... So that's what I was going on, that he's Masef Kol HaMachanot, so therefore he's the one who, all the ones who tarry behind. He's the monitor all the way in the back. So that's why I assumed all the way in the south. So if I'm wrong, somebody tell me. Yes?
Rabban, here is Pastor Lenin Shkalim, was about 10 minutes ago you said they weren't doing.
I just said, yeah. So the Rabban says they were using Shkalim, right? Right? Yeah. The Sforno gives a religious interpretation for all this. Just one second. Just what my mother said before about the tribes being separate. I'll just continue another two lines in the Ramban. Later on, and you have to go through the verses to see what he's doing. Later on, when it talks about counting, it doesn't say that once they encamped by the different flags, then Nivdilu Ashvatim Zemizeh, Vinodu Amishpachot La'ezer Shevet Hema. I'm continuing the Ramban, two more lines there. Velohut Ruchu Shemrak Ladat Kama Mishpachot Peshevet, Mishpachatim Nan Shay Lugulotem Velo Binisbar Shmotam. What we're not going to do is to see why he's saying this. You do need to go through the verses carefully and see when does it say Mishpacha, and when does it say Shevet, and when does it say count. Because it's not as simple as you think. Now, the Sforno in source 14, he says, "Vayit yodu amishpachotam." Why? Bebnei shehayu minyanam ze kidei sheyetzu bo litzava hamilchama hayta kavanah lishmor yachasam shezchut avot misayitam. That when one is going to go to war, one needs whatever protection they can have. So he here is pointing towards what we would call zchut avot, or what he calls zchut avot. So therefore, the purpose to establish the those going to war by their families is in order to invoke zchut avot, merit of the parents, because of the dangers involved in going out to war. Just as an aside, I'm going to mention source 15. I don't know how many of you have been following on Daf Yomi, but yesterday, or 2 days ago, they should have finished all of Kadshim. The last Mishnah in Kadshim is actually relevant to this. It says, we're not going to do a Siyam right now. I mean, we could, but none of you brought cheesecake. Lishkat HaGazit, Sham Haita Sanhedri Gdola, Shay Yisrael, that in, this is Mishnah in Midot, which describes the various parts of the Beit HaMikdash. So it says that there was an office here where the Sanhedrin would sit, Yoshevet Vidana Etakuna, And one of the major things that they would do, why sit on this Temple Mount and judge? That they would judge the kahuna. This is something which I alluded to earlier. If a kohen shenimtza bo pasul, and if a kohen was found to be, how would you say pasul in English?
Disqualified.
Then lovesh shchorim. Then he would dress in black. I won't say anything about the custom among certain people to wear black today. Umitatev shchorim, and wrap themselves in black, which, by the way, is a black hat. Because umitatev really means like a scarf, which they would wear on their heads, a turban on their heads. V'yotzeva haleichlo, and they would go out. V'shalonim tzabo pasul, and somebody who was not found to be inappropriate, lovesh levanim, umitatev levanim. He would then dress in white, because the color that of the big day kahuna would be white. So why would someone wear black? To show that they're not appropriate to be a Kohen, and that's where black clothing comes from as far as this mission is concerned. It continues and it says that nichnasu mishamesh, he would go in and he would serve in the temple. So this would be necessary for each time a new Kohen who's never served before, he would have to stand in front of the court, and the court would have to adjudicate and say, is this person a proper Kohen? Which I'm saying is interesting in terms of our discussion, although you could claim this is different, because this is actually to work in the Beit HaMikdash. And the Kohen who was declared a Kohen, afterwards he would, imechav HaKohenim, v'yom tov haya osim shelo nimtza pasul b'zaro shel Aron HaKohen. And if it was proven that he is in fact a Kohen, he would then serve, and then he would make a party to show that he is from the lineage of Aaron. The Kachayu Omrim, and this is the prayer, and this is then a prayer that it would say, but being I don't want to make a siyum today, I'm not reading any further right now. Let's skip to 18. 18 is towards the end of the same chapter, which means we had before the order was given, we have the beginning of the implementation of it, and here's the very end. Perek Aleph still, Pasuk Mem Dalet, Eila ha-pikudim, this is the counting, Asher pakad Moshe ba'aron, u'nisiyei Yisrael, 12 ish, ish echad levet avotav hayu, the 12 from the 12 tribes, each one for their own family. V'yu kol pikudei b'nei Yisrael levet avotam ben srim shana v'mala, kol yotzei tzava b'Yisrael. So all the people that were counted were the people who were yotzei tzava b'Yisrael, which means the people who were going out to war. V'yu kol pikudim, and here's the number of the people that went out. On this, the Ramban explains. Source 19. V'yu kol pikudei b'nei Yisrael levet avotam, kol yotzei tzava b'Yisrael. Hutzracha katuv lagid mispar haklal la'achashur hagid hapratim. It was necessary to give the general number after all the details. Ki nitztaveh Moshe v'Aron sheyidu mispar mipaked ha'am v'yidu mispar kol shevet. Ki kein derech hamalachim b'minotam et ha'am. So the first thing is that he's before he's about to ask a question, he says, this is the way that kings behave. Kings need a census. Kings need a census to know how many people there are there. And by the way, the main reason that kings need a census is for the purpose of taxes, right? He then says, and he's, by the way, even though he's going to say, I don't know, when the Ramban says, I don't know, it's not the same thing as when I say, I don't know. The Ramban says, I don't know, but later on he's going to explain what he doesn't know. So right now he doesn't know. A couple lines later he will know. Velo Hevonoti tam hamitzvah hazot. I don't know the reason for this command. Lama tziva bo Kadosh Baruch Hu. Why God commanded this? Ki yatzorech sheyitiyachasu l'shifteihim bavur hadigalim. That it was appropriate to establish the genealogy or the lineage in order to put people by the proper flag or in the proper camps. Which means to put people in each camp, you need to know which tribe they're from. Aval yediyah tamispar, but why do you have to know how many are there? And if there are too many from Yehuda, we're going to trade some Yehuda for Yisachar? I mean, that's not going to happen. So the Ramban over here is saying, I understand why we need to establish a genealogy. I don't understand why we need to have a census at this particular juncture. Lo yadati lama tziva sheyaduoto. I don't need why we need to know the number. Again, Rashi in the beginning of the parsha, which we didn't look at, says that God commands to count the Jews because he loves the Jews so much. And it's a very strange image. It's like this person who loves his money, likes to count his money all the time. God loves the Jews, loves to count the Jews all the time, which is good except for the problem that counting Jews can bring a curse with it, and does, you know, later on with David HaMelech. So over here, Ramban does not go in that direction of Rashi, right? He says, I don't know why we're counting at all. And then he says, Ulai lahudi'am chazdo aleihem, maybe to show, this is important, because it's interesting how it's important. He's saying that you know what would be a good reason to count? In order to show in the minds of the people the amount of compassion that God has had for the Jewish people, ki b'shivim nefesh yirdu avoteim mitzrayim, that with 70 souls they went down from Egypt, v'atahim kichol hayam, and now they've become as numerous as the sand by the sea. By the way, later on in Sefer Devarim, it will say, you've become as numerous as the stars in the sky, which, I mean, sometimes you would think it's so numerous you can't count, but no, it's so numerous that you can count. But when you go from a family of 70 and you go into hundreds of thousands, millions, if you count the women and children and others, you have millions of people. So that could be a real good reason to count, just to, you know, to show the chesed. I don't know.
So why do I keep thinking there were 6 million? That like 6 million is like a number, is like a basic.
There were 600,000. There were 600. No, I don't see any reason to times 10. I think you would. I think the first thing you would need to know is what the life expectancy was. 600,000 is men between the ages 20 and 60. So therefore, you need to know the life expectancy. You need then to ask somebody who knows population in ancient times to know how many people there would have been under the age of 20, how many women there would have been, and then how many people over. I think 2.5 million is. I think 2.5 to 3 million, again, depending on life expectancy. Anybody who said 6 million is probably because of events in the 20th century more so than anything else.
This isn't the first census.
No. Not only is it not the first...
No, but my question is, why does what Ramban say make sense if this isn't the first census?
Right. Not only is it not the first census, the last census was probably around 8 months ago or so. And right, which is why Rashi says, oh, it must be because he really likes them. The earlier one would have been when they were collecting materials for the Mishkan. So therefore, it's post-Yom Kippur of the first year, between Yom Kippur and Hanukkah, that year they can... No. After. Even though Rashi says they're counted also when they leave Egypt. I'm not exactly sure where he got that from. Let's continue. So the first thing is just one of appreciation. Right? You know, Ema, you know what this reminds me of? I said, you know what this reminds me of? Is my father's an only child. He's an only child with 4 children. How many grandchildren? We don't count. 25. How many great-grandchildren?
10, but just the beginning.
And how many on the way? Okay. So that you know of, but not that I'm hinting anything, because I don't know anything else. But you know, I just see that when the whole family gets together, this incredible amount of it's appreciation. It's basically saying, "Lo, here is an only child, and with all of these descendants, and you know, you look over here. That's where that's what the Ramban is saying over here. It's really why count." Is to really say thank you, God. Look, we came down to 70 people, and look what we have now. Okay, so that's what reminds. So you have something to say on Shabbos. Now,
so why aren't we 4 billion all the time? How come we aren't as many as we? The number has always been.
Because there's actually a curse that you're going to stay low, stay small number. Let me try to get through this Ramban. It's not a blessing, I don't think. Could we go 2 lines down where it's underlined? Va'od. And here he says something fascinating. Va'od ki haba lifnei av hanivim ve'echav kodesh Hashem va'achiv kodesh Hashem. That he's giving us another purpose for this, that each person is going to pass by Moshe and his brother Aaron, and this is the way he describes them. Moshe, Avnevim, right? The father of all prophets, and his brother, the holy, Kohen Gadol, each person's going to pass by. V'hunoda aleihem bishmo, he's going to like pause in front of them and say his name. Yelo b'davar hazeh schut v'chayim. That this is something which will cause for each individual merit and life. By the way, if I would have told you Hasidic Rebbe said this, right, you would go for that in a second. But he says, "Kiba b'sod ha'am uvichtav b'nei Yisrael v'schut ha'rabim b'misparam v'chein l'kulam schut b'mispar sheyimnu lefnei." That what is the positive side of being counted? Sheyimnu lefnei Moshe v'Aaron ki yisimu aleim ayin l'tova. That as you pass by Moshe and Aaron, they're going to look at you a second, and they're going to give you what's called an ayin tov, yivakshu aleim rachamim, and you're going to ask for them to pray for mercy for you. Hashem Elokei Avoteichem yosif aleichem kachem elef pa'amim v'lo yimit b'misparachem v'hashkolim kofer al nafshotechem. So it's interesting that the Ramban just turned this whole thing into a powerful religious experience of walking by. He, by the way, brings a source for this. Uvimidbar Sinai Rabba Ra'iti Kach. It's also interesting the way he phrases it. In the Midrash, Bamidbar Sinai Rabba, this is what I saw. Well, he saw it. I don't know if anyone else has ever seen this, because I looked for it, I couldn't find it, and then I looked in another place, and I looked at least one edition of the Ramban. I was going to call up your husband to look in the English, in the Art Scroll edition if they had it, but in the Chevelle edition, he says, I have not. You know, the source has eluded me, so the source has eluded me as well. So again, there were midrashim in the time of the Ramban that not everything, again, this is before the printing press, not every source that was in front of Rishonim has made it into modern times. But he quotes an interesting midrash. So this, again, this is, as far as I know, the only place you'll see it, that says as follows, B'mispar shemot l'gulgotam amalo kodesh baruch hu l'mnotam b'chvod uvigdula, to count them with honor and with, you know, pomp and circumstance, the kol echad v'echad, lo tia omer l'rosh mishpacha kama mishpachatcha, don't go just to the head of the family, okay, how many kids do you have? Kama banim yesh lecha, elo kul hun yahun avrim lefanecha be'emo v'kavod v'tama oneotam. Each one will pass by you with a sense of awe and reverence as they go by, and that's how they will be counted. Which means this idea that the Ramban gave us, he says he has a source for it, he has a midrash, but as I said, he has it. Yeah, it is certainly correct, correct, correct. Correct, correct. And then he writes, remember before he didn't know why we're being counted now? So then he says, I don't know, but now therefore he's throwing out a possibility. It's possible to say, it's like what kings do when people go to war. Because now they're supposed to go into the land of Israel, which means the Ramban finally brings us back to context, where we're up to, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. We're about to leave Mount Sinai. If we're leaving Mount Sinai, where are we going? So he says, Hayum mizmanim lekanes la'aretz ulevo b'milchama, and that means, why are we putting an army together at this point? You can say, why do we need an army 40 years before they're going in? No. We're supposed to go levo b'milchama imalcheya imari asher be'evar yardin v'hashar kulam, with all these other nations. K'moshe Amar, as he says, and he brings great proof that Moshe thinks we're going. What does Moshe say in Ba'alotcha? Nosim anachnu el makom asher amar Hashem. Moshe says, we're going now to the place that God said. That's the verse which was said as they leave Mount Sinai. V'hayo Moshe v'nisim tzrichim ladat misbar chutzei tzava. And now the Ramban turns this whole thing. Again, before he said, I don't know. Now he knows exactly why we need to count. Because we need to know chalutzei tzava milchama. We need to know the people who we're sending out to war. V'chein mispar kol shevet v'shevet u'ma yifkod alav b'maravot mo'av b'marachot milchama. That this is for the purpose of the army. Ki ha-Torah, listen carefully, lo tismoch al hanes. The Torah does not expect us to rely upon miracles. She'yirdof echad elef. That one Jew is going to come and say, I'm here, and 11 and 1,000 people are going to run away. Vizetam koyotzei tzava b'Yisrael. He goes, that's why we need an army. We need an army because you can't rely on miracles. Ki haminyan mipnei tzava hamilchama. The purpose for counting is because we're going to war. Va'ot shechalek lema'aretz l'misparam. And furthermore, we're going to need to know the numbers because we're going to divide the people, divide the land according to the numbers. Ki... Right, v'yadu kama Chavalim, just one second. Yiplu lahem min aretz anechushot lahem. Kilule davar hamaraglim hayu nichnasim sham miyad. For had it not been for the sin of the spies, they really would have gone in immediately, and this was the time to go in. So as far as the Ramban is... Again, it's interesting how he says in the beginning, I don't know why, he's, and at the end he knows exactly what the reason is. I want to get to one more interpretation which is found... in various Hasidic sources. We're going to see Rav Tzaduk say it. If you want, we can even see him say it twice. Source number 20, he writes, V'achar kach k'tiv v'yit yaldu al mishpachotam. Which takes us back to the problem we had in the beginning. What's the problem? The use of the word v'yit yaldu. What does v'yit yaldu mean? It's pa'el. They gave birth to themselves, as it were. Pirish Rashi leviktav yuchsin v'ramban hiksha al zeh ayin sham. Rashi says they brought, I mean, they actively brought their evidence, and the Ramban questioned this. V'yesh lomar, pirish v'yit yaldu, shenoldu v'naasu beria chadasha. They were reborn. Shezachu l'nefashot chadashot. They got new souls at that point. V'hainu ayidei ha-mispar, that by being counted, shehizkir shmotam, v'shemot aviyam lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, u'moshe Rabbeinu alav l'shalom, v'nisiyim, k'moshe katav gam Ramban, that by virtue of having what he's now describing as a transformative religious experience, by standing and by meeting Moshe, again, Moshe's in the camp, by meeting Moshe one-on-one and saying to Moshe, hi, my name is so-and-so, this is the name of my father, this is who I'm from. At that moment, the person was reborn. He says a very similar thing in the same source, a little bit later. This is the Rav Tzaduk HaKohen from Lublin. He died in 1900. He said, "Vayit yodua mishpachotam k'moshe amru v'hainu k'mo b'shabbat shezochin l'nishmin chaditin." That you get a new neshama, a neshama yitera on Shabbat. So therefore, like the same feeling a person can have on Shabbat, a spiritual feeling, he's saying, you know, even more so, that standing in front of Moshe. So it's interesting that, you know, that by the time we're finished with the Ramban and this whole description he has of standing in front of Moshe, Rav Tzaddik then says something which I think is very clever, is that then he goes back to this word, what does it mean, vayit yaldu? So again, I told you before, what's the pshat? The pshat is that they would say over their genealogy, they say, I am so-and-so and so-and-so from the word toldot. That I think is what the pshat is, as we saw before. But nonetheless, it is interesting. You know, I've thought for a while, and I've said this at various places, that I think that part of the problem that we have sometimes in education is the separation that we have between the masses and between what I would call the intellectual and the religious and the spiritual elite. Is that if a person doesn't have access to the really, great people, then I think that it will breed far more cynicism and far more questions and far more conflict. And at one point, again, please don't take this the wrong way. At one point, you know, it hit me that I was speaking to a group of people that almost all of them were brought up in Reform families or less, and we're talking about the oral Torah, and I'm saying, no, that the rabbis were very... And then I'm thinking, hold it. When I say rabbis, they're thinking about their rabbi in the shul, and they're saying, well, I can't believe in this tradition. So, again, I don't want to say anything bad about Reform rabbis, but I understand why they're having the questions that they're having. And if I'm saying, okay, trust the rabbinic tradition, and they never get to meet the kind of people who they should be trusted with in this tradition, how can I expect for someone to trust that tradition? And I always saw it that the lack of contact between, again, the real leaders or gedolei Torah that we have is something which is problematic. And I think as part of the educational opportunities that we provide our children and ourselves, that one of the things that we should do is that if we do have opportunities to be within proximity of greatness, is something which we need to take that opportunity for ourselves, because it is something which is transformative. Not even in the way that the Ramban is saying it over here, that you get to stand in front of them and therefore that person looks at you. How can you read this Ramban and not picture the Lubavitcher Rebbe giving out a dollar and saying, you know, what's your name and what's your mother's name, what's your father's name, and walking away from that feeling, wow, here's a great man who said, who took personal concern with me for this moment. Again, I understand that, but I think that there's more than one side to it. It's the Ramban is talking about how that impacts us, but it impacts us in lots of ways. And therefore, when we have a distance from these, you know, great people, which do exist, when we have a distance from them, then I said I think it brings cynicism. So they said I had to somehow tie this in with Shavuos. I don't know. How can I try this in the shoes? I think that... What? No. That is part of what receiving the Torah is. Receiving the Torah means receiving the Torah from the people who are, you know, the closest to it, who are on the highest level within it, who have the greatest affinity to it, who have the greatest knowledge within it. And when we are separate from these people, maybe we know that such people exist, but we're separate from these people, then I think that it impacts our ability of really accepting the Torah. On the other hand, it could be that we have to try to force some of these people to be more accessible. But all that I'm saying is that when you have the opportunity, take it. If you don't have the opportunity, think of ways of creating the opportunities. And some of it may be figuring out who these people are. I'm not, you know, the purpose of this was not to print Gadol cards and collect them. Figure out who you think these people are and invite them to your communities and create opportunities and create a time that there can be a dialogue, that you can get to meet them and see them. And I think that it would make a very big difference in terms of our accepting the Torah. Because, again, this Ramban is really a very powerful thought on what happened at that moment as they were being counted. Yeah. Oh, good. So blame the rabbis, okay?
Yeah.
But so right, right. So facilitate. I'm saying facilitate. Correct. Correct.
But in Toronto, I think you might be referring more to a congregational rabbi, and here there might not be that many.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was going to say about the Ramban. That's what I was going to say at the end, that Yisa'u, this is the lifting up. That's what I was going to say.